Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Nick drives one in the air to right field. That ball is hit well to the track, to the wall, and gone. Castellanos with an opposite field home run. Driven to right field. That ball is way back, and JD has gone deep the other way. A three-run shot. There's a drive in the air to deep left field. Pierce going back to the wall. He looks up, and gone. Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot. That ball skied in the air to right field. It's deep, going back, track, wall, and it's off the top of the wall. On his way to second is Martinez, who said that's a home run. J.D. thought it was out. There it is. Home run is the signal. J.D. Martinez has tied it up, and he walked him. It's a walk-off walk for Miguel Cabrera, and the Tigers win it in the 11th.
We win two games against a good team, good offense, so right. Kansas City, and try right. to play good baseball.
Both the Dodgers and Astros had scouts in attendance Friday for JV's start here at Comerica Park, and I still think those are the two most likely candidates to land him. But I'll say this as well. The Tigers are now, I'm sensing, a little more willing to maybe put in a bit of cash in the deal to facilitate that trade if the right prospect package is there. There are some more affordable names. Sonny Gray makes less. I think Jay Happ with the Jays makes less. I think there are enough pitchers out there that make a lower salary that they would probably say, I'm not going to pay that
premium. They don't have
that
resume, though.
They don't. But again, Rod, I think so many times in baseball, especially at the deadline, it's all about how does he look right now. Well, Justin Wilson right now for the Tigers, a lot of teams like him. I would continue to add the Astros and Dodgers are both in the mix on him, as well as the Nationals and Brewers. Justin Wilson, from what I can tell from sources, is the Tigers' most marketable trade chip. A lot of action right now for J.D. in the National League West. Those two teams, the Rockies and Diamondbacks, would like to get J.D. Martinez to help them, I think, against that lefty pitching.
That one, left center. Zimmer on the move, and that baby's gone. Matt Chapman has a big league home run.
He connects against the two-time All-Star, Corey Kluber.
Center field, and that baby's gone, and we're tied. Drives this one to right center field. Zimmer's back. Zimmer near the wall, and that baby's gone. Number 21 for Yonder Alonso. Davis, right center field. Hit pretty well, and it is gone. It's gone. Chris Davis is walking off for the A's. Holy cow.
Oh, boy. You walk three. I mean, six of the eight hitters he faced got on base. He just wasn't locating. He didn't know where he was throwing his fastball. I mean, it's discouraging for a number of reasons. You're trying to win the game today. You know, you're trying to salvage a game out of the series, and you're down four before you can even look up. That's a hard way to play.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I might dare to say that's about as critical as Terry Francona will ever be about one of his players. That was about as harsh as I think Terry gets. Did you hear that very last clip, the very last soundbite in the montage put together by Jim Cushlin of Tiger Sound and of Indian Sound? Did you catch that? That's just about as bad as it gets. Terry Francona does not like to rip his players. I think we all know that. He doesn't like to rip his players. And he generally, if somebody did something poorly, he'll always couch it with a, but he'll be better, something like that. Or he'll say, you know, it wasn't just him, it was everybody, those kinds of things. But from what I just heard from Terry Francona at the end of that montage, and Kush, I'm going to want you to play it again, so you can get ready, let me know when it's ready. But from what I just, that might be about as critical as Terry Francona gets. And he's talking about Trevor Bauer. As we talk a little baseball to get you started this afternoon on the extravaganza, it doesn't get a whole lot worse than that from Terry Francona, because he's not that guy. He doesn't throw his players under the bus. Let me hear that again.
You walk three, six of the eight hitters he faced got on base. He just wasn't locating. He didn't know where he was throwing his fastball. It's discouraging for a number of reasons. You're trying to win the game today. You know, you're trying to salvage a game out of the series, and you're down four before you can even look up. That's a hard way to play.
Six out of the eight hitters reached base. He didn't know where he was throwing his fastball. You're trying to salvage one game in the series, and you're down four or three or whatever it was before you can even look up. That is not very Terry Francona-like, and it really doesn't get much stronger than that from him. He's a player's guy. He likes his team. He likes his players. He likes them to feel happy. He likes them to feel like he's got their back. It doesn't get much harsher than that. I would like to say for the record, I intend to get a hell of a lot much harsher than that as I welcome you to the extravaganza on this Monday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. I have got some thoughts about the first place. Boy, talk about a joke. The first place at the break, Cleveland Indians, coming out of the break and playing like pure garbage against one of baseball's worst teams. The Oakland Athletics are 39-50 coming into the weekend, and they just sweep the Indians out of Oakland's pathetic, horrific, aged, outdated mausoleum like they're just, you know, a little league team, and they batted like little league players. They're 20 games out in their division, and they swept the Indians. I've got a few things that I would like to say about that as we get started today. I promise I will be a lot less restrained than Terry Francona, and that was Terry at probably his angriest. So the Indians have now, counting the game they lost to another last-place team at the end of the first half, the Padres, they have lost four in a row. They have lost 6 out of 10, and thankfully they still hold a 1.5-game lead over the Twins and a 2-game lead over the Royals, but they are just playing awful, awful baseball right now, offensively primarily, but especially you just heard Trevor Bauer, you know, getting the Terry Francona veiled treatment, if you will, because he was terrible. And how about the Tigers, by the way? While everybody swirls, you know, trade talks continue to swirl around so many of the Tigers, and rightfully so. There will be a bunch of potential deals made anyway. You know, you look up and here they are, because they've won a couple in a row now, and they're just sitting six-pack. You know, it was a lot worse than that, and it could still be far worse than that. Probably will be between now and July 31st. It probably will be a lot worse than that. But for now, they've won a couple, and they're only six-pack in a division that continues to stay a lot tighter than it should when you have the defending American League champions, the Cleveland Indians, who got better in the offseason with a couple of acquisitions, still struggling and treading water and not wanting to pull away from anybody. What a very, very weird weekend. Quite frankly, Jim Cushlin, what a very weird baseball race right now. The way things are going in the American League Central, it's just that nobody... I mean, is this going to be a freaking division race in September? Is this going to be Cleveland and Minnesota and Kansas City literally duking it out for the division title when the Twins are supposed to be around last place and the Royals are supposed to be just a middling 500 team, which they are, and a middling 45-4500 team that they are, 45-45-500 team that they are, shouldn't be anywhere near the Cleveland Indians, and yet there they sit. Is this actually going to be a race in September?
Well, if they keep having series like this one, then yeah, it could very well be. The biggest thing that I'm struck by is something I don't think you mentioned about that for the Indians. We kind of forget because the All-Star break was you know, smack all of last week, so it kind of throws your thinking about it off. But, okay, you get swept by the A's. But if you recall, Bob, they also lost the last game last Sunday to finish off that series against the Tigers. So that's four losses in a row, something that hasn't happened for the Indians in literally two calendar years.
Yeah, well, July I did mention the four in a row and the six out of their last ten that they have lost. So you're right. It's not just out of the break. You're right about that. But it's a bad stretch of baseball, clearly.
Terrible time to have it, too, because you get Oakland, last-place team. Then it's Giants, last-place team.
Yep.
Blue Jays, fun for your ALCS rematch thing, but Blue Jays aren't doing very well. Makeup game against the last-place Reds.
Yep.
Then it's three against the Angels. And then it's three against the White Sox, who are in last place in selling, before you get to a team over 500 against the Red Sox, and that's on deadline day. So this is the stretch where they got to separate themselves because these are bad teams.
And I'm just looking at the last three series as a whole, too. I mentioned the Padres. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Padres.
That was ugly.
Which is a last place team and a horrible team. Then they won 2 out of 3 against the Tigers. As you say, they lost the last one, and they got swept by the Athletics. When you play San Diego, Detroit, and no diss to Detroit, but it is what it is right now and where they are. This is a team that's looking to trade people, and you know they're not a threat to anybody. So you, when you play, in fact, so we'll go back to the series before that because you had Tigers for 4 there as well. They ended
up ended up being 3. There was a rainout
because of the rainout. So you go back, Tigers, Padres, Tigers, Athletics for 12. And in my estimation, that ought to be at least 9-3. This is what you should do against those teams in those situations.
And they kind of did against the Tigers. They took 2 out of 3 in each series, so they did what they had to do
but
against the Tigers.
But you should have swept San Diego.
Or at least take 2 out of 3, my goodness.
I'm sorry, it's a last-place team. You should have swept San Diego. But you're right, 2 out of 3 would have been at least the minimum acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And you sure as hell ought to take 2 out of 3 or sweep the Oakland Athletics. And
darn
I know
right.
It's on the road, but you saw the mausoleum. You saw empty that place was.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, it's still, you know, the worst ballpark in baseball. Nobody goes to watch them because, A, the team is terrible. B, the facility, the venue is terrible. So, you know, you go out there and you lose 3 in a row to them, 5-0, 5-3, 7-3, give up 17 runs in 3 games.
Ugh.
That's unacceptable. 6 runs, offense is all you can get. It's like they went to Oakland and left their bats back in Cleveland or something.
Whole weekend reminded me of that home series a few weeks back against the Twins. Remember, they went on the road trip, went 7-1 to Minnesota and Baltimore. They took over first place. You're like, this is it. They're never giving it back. And they promptly go out and get swept by the Twins and barely scored a run.
That's right.
This whole weekend reminded me of that, except they were on the road.
Meanwhile, the Tigers just come out of the All-Star break and do a couple of good things. They did lose the opener on Friday, the return to the Blue Jays, but then they pound Toronto pitching 11-1 on Saturday, 6-5 yesterday, get her done too. So now the question is, you know, where do they go from here? Obviously, this should not change the fact that they are a seller. They've got to make some moves to get their ball club deeper. They got to add some prospects. They got to add some talent to the farm system and move some guys. And the question is who's it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And really interesting piece today by Buster Olney talking about who it's going to be. Who are some of the guys who are more likely to go than not? And I think, 3 out of the 5 guys he identified are indeed Tigers. He talks about Justin Verlander. He talks about J.D. Martinez. And he talks about Justin Wilson. And you had a little bit of that, obviously, in the montage there is John Paul Morosi talking about it.
Yeah, Fox Sports, he stopped by the booth on Saturday's game.
Right. So a lot of guys, you know, a lot of guys from different places are seeing the same kind of thing. Just for the sake of discussion, I want to read a quick clip on Buster. Here's what he says about JD. The position player market is saturated, true, generally. And in the hours leading up to the trade deadline, some general managers expect a purge of salary, but Martinez has more value than others because he's a strong middle-of-the-order hitter, he's having a good year, batting well over 300 with power. You'd have to live with his defense to take him on, but his offense more than offsets that, and it will interest a lot of teams. Martinez has destroyed left-handed pitchers, carrying a 500 average with damage into Sunday's game, 18 hits and 36 at-bats, including 4 doubles, 1 triple, 6 homers, 6 walks, 6 strikeouts. He would present an incredible weapon for the Dodgers, whose struggles against lefties last year are well documented. Other teams that are possible are the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies. Now, which team offers the best package of prospects to get J.D. Martinez away from the Tigers? I don't know. Generally speaking, the Cardinals have a nice deep farm system, so they might have a little bit more to offer if they are interested in doing so. But I think the Dodgers, as Buster points out, would be a very intriguing team as far as the big league clubs. I just don't know enough about who their prospects are that they might be willing to part with. Justin Wilson, a Tigers closer, is not a classic left-hander, writes Buster, in that he doesn't dominate left-handed hitters with great breaking ball, but he is outstanding against right-handed hitters and can serve in multiple roles. His value is so high right now that officials think Detroit will capitalize on his standing in the market and move him. Just about every contender could use him in one form or another. That is a lock, pretty much. Somebody's going to offer something that Alavila cannot. I'm going to make you. I can't do it. I was going to do make you enough. I can't refuse, but I can't do it, De Niro. And then, of course, Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander has been mentioned in trade talks, Buster writes, and it's possible that market moons and stars will align and the future Hall of Famer will switch teams, but any Verlander deal would be incredibly complicated for the Tigers to pull off in the short time frame that remains before the July 31st deadline because of his salary, his stature in Detroit history, and his ability to veto any proposed deal. So, let's go backward forward, because we started talking about this some last week, Kush, that it would appear that any interest that the Tigers have in trading Justin Verlander is pretty much for show. They are not interested in trading him. If they were, they would not be asking for, in multiple reports that we have read and covered on this show, they would not be asking for a deep, and I used that word three times because it was in one of the articles, the ESPN articles last week,
right?
The deep haul that they want from another team for him, which essentially says, don't bother asking because we're going to ask for more than you will be willing to give. That, along with the money, because of his contract, they're going to have to pay a deep amount of that contract for somebody to take him in a potential deal, and they don't want to do that either. It's very clear that they don't want to move him. The question is why? Why would you want to keep a relatively aging, and I use that word carefully, I'm not saying he's ancient, but a relatively aging superstar who isn't having a good year, who is going to be on your books for big, big dollars for a long time here in the next couple, and who's going to be surrounded by a bunch of young guys if the moves for Wilson and Martinez or more are successful? He's going to be surrounded by a bunch of young guys who aren't ready to win right now anyway, right now meaning next year or even 2 years from now while Verlander is still there. Why would you want this older guy in the middle of it making up all that money for a team that is not a contender?
Yeah.
And the answer to that may have been found in Buster Olney's commentary today. His, quote, stature in Detroit history. This very well may be the Tigers front office essentially saying we don't want to tick off every Tigers fan that there is by trading Justin Verlander. The sight of him in somebody else's gear with somebody else's logo on his cap would be too much for them to bear. We talked somewhat about this last week, and Buster kind of lays it out. And we talked to him about how, you know, Indians fans felt when CC Sabathia
right.
traded and Cliff Lee was traded. And while both of them were Cy Young winners, neither of them had the duration, the length of career in that city that Verlander has had in Detroit.
Yep.
And the fans went crazy when both of them were moved, even though, you know, in CC Sabathia's case, the haul included Michael Brantley, which continues to be a star player to this very day.
Never forget, he was the player to be named later in that deal.
That's right.
I love that.
It was supposed to be Matt LaPorta, who was one of the top hitting prospects of all of minor league baseball at that time, that was supposed to be the gem of that deal.
Right, and he flopped completely.
Didn't work out at all. That's exactly right.
That's why they're called prospects again, folks.
And then in the Cliff Lee deal, too, ironically, similar story. The star of that deal for the Indians, in return for Cliff Lee, was supposed to be a fireballing 18-year-old out of high school named Jason Knapp,
right,
who ended up not even making it because of injuries. And Carlos Carrasco was kind of
an afterthought guy. Yeah,
he was a throw-in, but a guy that they thought could be good, but not was going to be dominant
right.
in any way, shape, or form. And lo and behold, Brantley, the player to be named later, is still with them and is a star. And Carrasco, the second pitching prospect in that deal, is a star for the Indians in the front of the rotation, too. So very, very strangely. But anyway, I'm getting off in the weeds on that. Verlander is extraordinarily popular for his history with the Tigers, and it's kind of curious that they might be willing to eat all of the multi-millions left on his contract and let him pitch out the rest of his career in Detroit with a team that is nowhere near contention. All because the fans won't like to see him go. I find that, I understand, but I just disagree with that mentality.
Yeah, and you can't let, if you're Al Avila, you can't really let that necessarily, drive you. I mean, if you're going to deal Verlander, yeah, it goes without saying you're going to upset some Tigers fans. That's just how it's going to be because of who he is. It also, by the way, all on this Verlander subject, as I keep thinking about this, Bob, it makes it all the more paramount that they get good returns. You know, you look at the return and say, okay, that's totally acceptable for J.D. Martinez and especially
but
Wilson.
But even so, you won't know.
True.
You know, like you said, these are prospects. We didn't know. I mean, people who said, hey, it's a pretty good deal, even though Sabathia, nobody wanted to see him go. Look what they got. Matt LaPorta is one of the most prized prospects in all of baseball, minor league baseball. He was like a triple-A phenom. And Brantley might be a puntcomer. Who knows? We'll see, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, you know, people said, yeah, that's a good deal. It turns out to be a terrible deal from the LaPorta side. Thank God the Brantley thing worked out. So even, Jim, if Tigers fans say, okay, that's a fully acceptable deal. If we have to lose Justin, it's good because of those guys. You still won't know until probably 2019 if that was a
– yeah.
Because they're not going to give him anybody that's a that's a contributor right now. It's going to be – it's going to be a double or a triple A, you know, would-be, could-be potential star later on.
And that's why the other part of it is because Verlander and Miguel Cabrera are basically the faces of this franchise right now. And I don't think anybody would really disagree with that. Sure, there are others, but, you know, they're on the rung below Miggy and Verlander, right?
Agreed.
The problem is,
Victor might have a say in that, his duration and success.
Oh, I'm about to bring him up, by the way.
And likability, you know, he's kind of one. Maybe there's three faces of the Tigers, perhaps, right now, but go ahead.
Fair point. But the point I'm trying to make is that if it was just Verlander in terms of face of franchise and hefty money, then maybe you try to deal in the periphery and do that. But the problem is you have Verlander and Miguel Cabrera, and assuming he's not traded or bought out at the end of the year, and because I believe there's an opt-out that kicks in after this year only. And then Victor, all four of those guys, Bob, are aging, Upton the least, of course. He's the youngest.
Yeah.
And all $18 million or more a season, just on those four guys. If it was just Verlander fitting that criteria, then maybe you could feel better about, okay, we'll hold off. We won't anger the fans too much by trading the face of the franchise. But you really have to entertain it, because even if you trade away Verlander, you still have those other three guys I mentioned who will all make 18-plus million next season, and none of them are getting any younger. It was nice to see Miguel Cabrera, you know, smack one over the course of the weekend series win, but he's still only got 12 and is batting under 270. Very un-Cabrera-like numbers. We've all mentioned what's gone on with Victor Martinez, headlined, of course, by his own heartbeat issue, you know, a different one, but in that same vein that Francona was dealing with. And then Justin Upton, he's producing, but his contract is so hefty, and he doesn't like the way things are going. And I got to triple check to make sure I'm reading all that right, but I believe there's an opt-out in his contract after this year, and he may go elsewhere. So the problem is you got too many guys, as we discussed before, that are making these heftier contracts. Like, spin this another way, Bob. This is kind of why I love where our Indians are contract-wise going forward. Assuming Santana walks, I just mentioned Tigers have four guys at $18 million or more for next season. There's only one guy for the Indians who will be making that kind of money, and that's Encarnacion. Everybody else is below, not just 18, but about $15 million and below for per-year salaries for next year. And then as we've said many times, there's only a couple guys that are free agents from the Indians. Santana, Austin Jackson, and Brian Shaw are the only free agents. So that whole money thing that they have tied up at the top is really, you know, what's hurting them longer term.
Right. No, you're exactly right. We're going to dive a lot more into this and all things Major League Baseball. This is the second half is now officially underway, one series in. And we are, 14 days away? 2 weeks from today, right? The 31st?
Two weeks from today. Actually, 2 weeks and a half hour. I want to say it's 4 p.m. on Monday, the 31st.
That sounds about right, the official trading deadline will be here. So we, of course, are going to talk a lot more about that coming up. In just a few minutes, as a matter of fact, Mark Normandin, MLB editor at SB Nation, will be joining us to talk about trade possibilities and also about the races and where they are. But for now, I also want to remind you about golf, because we are going to be live coming up on Thursday and Friday from the Marathon Classic. And Mike Miller is there today and tomorrow and the rest of the week as well. We've got tremendous coverage of the Marathon Classic from Highland Meadows. So Mike will be there for drive time from 5 to 6. We'll be going live on Thursday, Friday, 3 to 5. Mike Jamison and Great Lakes Golf today will be there Saturday to noon. Cheap Seats with Mick Gonzalez will be there Sunday morning. And Cushion's going to be hanging around all weekend long at Highland Meadows, providing updates both Saturday and Sunday. That, my friends, is complete coverage of the Marathon Classic right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So coming up in just a couple, we are going to talk a little more baseball with Mr. Normandin of SB Nation, MLB editor there. And want to get you involved as well. Don't forget that. Be a part of this program on this Monday at 866-240-1065. We'd love to have you right here on The Ticket.
Ganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll onward at 3:38. Thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding afternoon. Indians had a crappy weekend in Oakland. You know what, Kush? I just realized the city of Oakland has not been good.
I wasn't going to bring that part up.
It's one thing to lose to the best team in basketball in the finals for the third straight year. Well, you know, lose to them for the third straight, but to play them for the third straight. It's another thing to lose to the worst team in baseball, at least the worst team in the American League.
You're not making me feel better, by the way, comparing it to that, because now I see losing two out of three to the Giants, because all they did was cross the bay.
Right. That's
so
exactly
from their point
right.
of view, it's almost the same thing.
On the plus side, they get to go from playing in the worst ballpark in baseball to maybe the best. You know, if you like that waterfront property, as all realtors certainly tell us we should, then you want to go in and play in San
Francisco. No doubt about that. There's definitely a step up. No having to worry about raw sewage in visitors' lockers. Not saying that happened this weekend, but it has happened, as we know, in the past.
Indians got smoked. Tigers took two out of three from Toronto, though. And now, of course, all kinds of trades are being rumored, and some trades are even being made. And joining us now to break down all things Major League Baseball is Mark Normandin, who is the baseball editor for MLB editor for SBNation.com. Mark, thanks for joining us out here in Toledo. How are you?
Doing well. It's nice to be done with All-Star festivities and moving on to, you know, a bunch of trades that may or may not ever happen, but they're fun to talk about.
What kinds of duties did you find yourself encumbered with during All-Star week?
Oh, we had a team out in Miami, and I was back in the office, so it was a lot of coordinating back and forth.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah. I mean,
taking all their work and turning into other work. And
I was going to feel really bad for you that you had to go down to Miami for a week. You know, that would have been really terrible. That's hard. But no, you actually had to work. They had all the fun in the sun, and you had to coordinate it all back the home base.
We sent Grant Crispy down there, and he's never experienced humidity in his life because he's been West Coast his whole life. So his first experience with humidity was going to Miami, and yeah, it was good for him, but now he knows, and I don't think he likes it. I don't think he'd be moving there.
Yeah, at least the roof was closed though, so he didn't have to worry about it inside. You know, when they were doing the derby and the actual event. But yeah, you step outside there in the summertime. Miami in July is not a pleasant place to be. I can tell you that. I lived there for a cup of coffee, and believe me, it is not a very pleasant place to be in the summertime. Okay, let's talk about some places that are pleasant to be. Specifically, how about Washington, D.C., because a move was made. Washington acquires the A's 2016 closer, Ryan Madsen, and their 2014 closer, Sean Doolittle. What the heck's going on there?
Well, the Nationals traded for two good relievers, which means the Nationals now have two good relievers.
That's only two.
So that was probably... That was really the whole focus of the trade, is they looked at Matt Albers, who's the only guy who's pitched well this year, and they're like, yeah, we probably can't expect that to keep happening, huh? I think they had, I might be off by, you know, a decimal or something, but I think they had a 5.31 ERA as a team, their bullpen, through this morning. So getting Doolittle and Madsen is, you know, it's not tiny. That's the kind of thing that could keep them from dropping, you know, yet another LDS and LDS, which is, you know, they've got so many bullpen memories. None of them are good from the playoffs, and they were pretty much setting themselves up to lose in the first round again this year.
Yeah,
so,
I think
this might not even be the end of the bullpen changes.
I certainly love the idea of seeing them in a series, perhaps in LDS, LCS, against the Dodgers. I would love to see that pitching, those lineups against one another. But you're right, it would be a mismatch if it came down to the bullpens as they were constructed. So the question now is, how much of a difference does that make for them in a potential series against maybe the best team in baseball like that? And then secondly, do you think they're done in Washington?
I think there's room to add another reliever or two, even. The David Robertson trade rumors have been swirling around them for months and months and months, and eventually someone's going to take him off the White Sox hands. There's really no reason it can't be the Nationals. You know, they don't have a closer that's doing anything spectacular over there, and no one, you know, there's no one who's above being replaced. Even Doolittle and Madsen, as great as they are, and you could slot either of them in as the closer, at least they're former closers, so there's no awkwardness there where they've been traded for and now they're getting a demotion. So there's room to bring in someone like Robertson. And if you can do a Doolittle, Madsen, Robertson bridge in the playoffs, you're in a great place. And you might not even need to use all three of them in a single game when you've got guys like Scherzer and Strasburg up there.
Yeah, that's a great point. No question about it. We're talking to Mark Normanden, who is the baseball editor for SBNation.com. He wrote today on the website about this trade with the Nationals. And our man Jim Cushlin here with me as well. Mark has got a question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, and to follow this up with the Nationals, I've been kind of watching them a little bit in the National League because, you know, the rest of the National League East has been garbage since day one. You know, I've been feeling since April you can basically pen them in as the champs. But, yeah, they have to be able to get some more bull. And I think more. I know what you had just said, but I got to believe that there's at least one more trade involving the Nationals and getting a bullpen guy. Because if you're Washington, you can't let this happen again. If they just get to the playoffs and then bow out because of bad bullpen stuff in the division series, then you can righteously call this season a failure. I don't care how many games they would win or how awesome Max Scherzer, the former Tiger, is in. You have to make another bullpen move because if I'm a Washington fan, or even the front office, minimal acceptability is at least making it to the NLCS. You can't be losing in the best of five opening round as they have in the past. You can't do it again. They have to advance.
And it's been the same thing with them every time they've lost, essentially, which is just no one did anything to fully address it. Even this offseason, they let Mark Melancon walk, and a pitcher they added because they needed help in the bullpen during the season, and then they did nothing to address it. So getting these two guys is a good start. They definitely could use more help. I mean, not to bring up a painful memory from a year ago, but you know, you saw what happened when the Indians didn't have enough pitching. It carried them through to a certain point, but then they were all those guys were tired by the end.
Yeah.
And the Nationals, even if they succeed, can set themselves up for that kind of situation. It's what happens to Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs pretty much annually, too. People talk about it like he's not clutch or something, or you don't want him in a big win game. It's because the Dodgers run him down. Like, he's the only guy they can rely on, and it just puts them in a terrible position. So avoiding that is really should be the number one priority for the Nats for the next week.
Mark, since you know, let's use that as a segue, because I was going to ask you anyway at some point about potential Tigers to be dealt. We, of course, cover the Tigers closely here in Toledo, as well as the Indians to the east of us. But Justin Verlander is a guy that a lot of people have talked about moving, but the Tigers are making it very, very difficult because either A, they're asking for the moon and the stars and more in terms of prospects back, and B, they don't want to pay nearly as much of the fair share that they would have to pay of Verlander's contract. But having said that, the name Dodgers has come up a couple of times in the conversations we've had as far as Verlander. So they don't have to, you know, run down Clayton Kershaw, and it's not such a difficult thing in the postseason. You've got Kershaw and you got Alex Wood, who's tremendous. Would a guy like Verlander fill in the middle of that order or that rotation somewhere in the third spot or so? Would that be something that they might be willing to make a move for?
Verlander's at the top part of his career where someone in that front office or coaching staff thinks they can fix what's going on with him. I could see them doing it. Because the Tigers might not want to give up too many prospects, might want a certain level of prospect back, and they might not want to pay too much money, but you're going to have to give up on one of those or the other. So if the Tigers decide they're going to pay a huge chunk of that, get Verlander's spot open up, get something back for him, you know, that's probably the thing that will work the best for him and probably what the Dodgers would be amenable to. I don't know if he's the best fit just because he's been so poor this year. But it's all because it's after such a strong 2016. But he also had the poor start to 2016 that kept everyone from seeing just how good the season really was. So you know, he's kind of at that age and that money, and there's just enough contract left where you wonder if the numbers are ever going to work out or if the Tigers are really just going to have to sit here and deal with whatever is left of Verlander, good or bad.
Yeah. And there's some question we were talking about before you came on. There's some question as to whether the Tigers really want to move him at all. And maybe the reason why they're just being so obstinate when it comes to prospects and money is because they really don't want to move him because they don't want to alienate the fans because his career is there in Detroit. And maybe they just don't want to see that history kind of wiped out by putting him in another city. So, you know, it's possible that's not going to happen. What about the rest of the Tigers, though? Again, they've got to be sellers, even though they're only, and I use that word loosely because it's today, only six games out thanks to the Indians struggling at Oakland, and they had a couple of wins in a row for the Tigers, but they're going to be sellers. They know that they're not a real contender here. J.D. Martinez, Justin Wilson, you know, you mentioned a reliever, maybe Washington adding another one. That's another name that might be interesting to them. I think Justin Wilson's interesting to a lot of people. Ian Kinsler potentially being another name. What do you see happening there? How many of these guys do you see being moved?
It's going to be those fringe guys or the guys with little time left, like J.D. Martinez, who's obviously great, but you know the Tigers aren't in a position to extend to re-sign him. They have so much money on the books right now that's not in a good place. You know, it's not good money. You've got all that Verlander money. You've got, you know, God forbid, Miguel Cabrera is never going to be a huge star again. You know, he's still playing well, but he hasn't been Miguel Cabrera.
Right.
You know, Justin Upton's been fine, but he's going to probably opt out because his deal is positioned to reward him for that sort of thing. Jordan Zimmerman's been just a horrible disaster, so. They're not going to be able to move those guys. Like, there's probably no deal where they trade off some very important asset, but attach Jordan Zimmerman to it, you know, to kind of make that go away. So it's more likely that you're going to see guys, like you said, Justin Wilson, J.D. Martinez, maybe Kinsler, if a team needs help at second base, or maybe even, the Red Sox at third base, if they can't make something work with, like, the Mets and Asdrubal Cabrera or Martin Prado. You know, Dombrowski knows Kinsler. He traded for him in the first place. Could be a fit there.
Jim Quisling here again. What about the market for an Alex Avila, especially the Cubs with their possible catching situation? I kind of thought Avila played well enough, to my surprise, to maybe be one of the backup catchers for the AL All-Star team. He didn't, but he's having one of his better seasons in a while. It's a one-year deal. He's a veteran. He's not part of the Tigers' long-term plans. What do you see the market for Alex Avila?
There are multiple teams. Go back to the Red Sox again. Probably maybe use a catcher. There will definitely be teams vying for a catcher. I'm not sure what you're going to get for the rental, but that's a player whose value might be more clear as the deadline approaches instead of right now. As teams start to see who their competitors have picked up and just how much they need to do and how much they need to give up in order to keep up.
You know, Mark, we're talking to Mark Norman, and who is a baseball editor for SB Nation. You wrote, speaking of the Red Sox, and you mentioned them twice in the last answer, you wrote a little bit on Friday about Pablo Sandoval, the Panda Bear, who was once, you know, the toast of San Francisco and, you know, such a great hitter and such a lovable guy and so on and so forth. One of the all-time worst contracts, one of the worst free agent signings. I'd like to say that this would be a cautionary tale for our teams, but I don't think it will be, because teams that are desperate will give guys extraordinary contracts that they can't possibly live up to, particularly toward the back end. But boy, this really is one of the worst. Sandoval DFA'd last week.
Yeah, and like you said, there's no real lesson to take from it. You know, people like to say, oh, obviously Sandoval was going to, you know, when he was on the wrong side at 30, he was going to balloon and he wouldn't be able to do anything anymore. You know, this all happened before that, and he came into camp in great shape, and he's still in really great shape. He just, for some reason, cannot field anymore. And he used to be a really good defensive player, which is one of those things that's very difficult to convince anyone of, especially now.
Despite not
he was
a
legitimate
a lot of range,
gold
with his weight, he handled the he had good leather.
Yeah, he was agile and he had the instincts for it, and he could hit. And moving to Fenway Park made so much sense. But you know, he had a down year, and then he got hurt, and he just hasn't been the same since the injury. And like, these things happen, and it's a risk teams have to take. If you're going to go into free agency, which every team except for the Rays basically do, the deep end of free agency, you're gonna have moves like this sometimes that just don't work out. And the Red Sox are honestly in a good position, because while Sandoval didn't work out for them, they made the playoffs last year without him. They're in first place in the AL East this year without him, or honestly anyone at third base. So They're in a spot where there's no real lesson to learn. It didn't work. Other things have worked out for them. You know, giving up all those prospects for Chris Sale has worked out so far. Giving all that money to David Price has been working out so far. Sometimes it doesn't.
Mark, you, in the same article that you write about Sandoval, you talk about some of the other awful contracts, and you mention a few Tigers. So I'm going to throw you in. We already talked about the possibility of Verlander being traded, and also Miguel Cabrera. And also Jordan Zimmerman, and here they are, the Tigers. Verlander is owed $70 million more through 2019, as we talked about. Miguel Cabrera is having the worst season since his rookie season, as you point out. He's owed just shy of $200 million more on this deal through age 40 in 2023. And this year does not bode well if this is the beginning of a decline like that. and Zimmerman in the second year of a $110 million contract. So I mean, they've got three of the worst contracts, at least based on current performance. Now, I don't want to throw stones at these guys totally, because Cabrera, of course, was amazing in the last couple of years. Verlander, he had won the Triple Crown and MVP a few years back. Verlander last year might have been the Cy Young winner. Maybe should have been the Cy Young winner. But for now, based on how all three of those guys look right now and the amount of money left on their deals, yeah, that's something tough to swallow if you're the Tigers front office.
Yeah, the thing with, at least with Cabrera, he was so great a year ago, and I feel like there are two paths for him to take. He could become the next Albert Pujols, where he's clearly overpaid, but he's still contributing.
Right.
And if you have the financial ability to work around him being overpaid, you know, you can do something with that. As long as your farm system is never completely bereft of anything like the Angels was, and the Tigers seem like they're historically in a better place than the Angels have been. The other path is that Miguel Cabrera rebounds, a la David Ortiz, and is worth that money pretty much from here until the end of the contract. That's quite the range. There's, you know, it's not like Miguel Cabrera is having a bad season. He's just not having the kind of season you would expect for someone making this kind of money. If he had this season and was a free agent, no one's going to sign him to a $200 million contract this winter, you know. So it's not hopeless yet, but they're probably not going to be able to move him at the deadline or anything like that if they were thinking about that.
Yeah, and that seems fair enough, Mark. Just one more quick one to talk about the teams that we follow here. The Indians underperforming, I think really most people would agree. This is a division they should not be this close with right now, the second and third place teams, just a game and a half and two games up on Minnesota and Kansas City, respectively. Not sure exactly where the problem lies, if there's one position specifically that needs to be upgraded. Maybe it's a couple. I wouldn't have thought they'd be buyers at all, just because they kind of had the same roster that took them to the seventh game, the 10th inning of the seventh game of the World Series last year, and made it better with the addition of Encarnacion. And maybe taking on his money makes it impossible to do anything else. But now that they're kind of scuffling just to win the division, you know, and of course they got to compete with the Red Sox and the Astros and everything else, do you think they do something in the next 2 weeks? And if so, how big a move?
Probably nothing huge. Maybe some things at the margins to help tighten things up. They're still the best team in that division. The Twins are good, and the Twins are ahead of schedule. And it's possible that the Twins end up being one of those teams with a lot of good young players that just kind of runs out of steam before the year's over. The Yankees are kind of doing that right now. Not that the Yankee season is anywhere close to over, but you can start to see where some of the cracks are showing and where they could be worse by the time September's really rolling around. So Indians should do something, nothing huge. I think they're just mostly suffering from less severe versions of what the Cubs and the Mets are going through, which is they came in with a pretty similar roster to the year before, and sometimes all those players don't play the same way.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And I was going to ask you about the Cubs since you brought it. A lot of people just said it's a World Series hangover. Do you believe in that sort of thing, where the high of last year, they just don't play with the same energy? That's not to say they're not playing hard. But the spirit, the adrenaline, the whatever you want to call it, just isn't there, even though it's the same guys, because both of these two World Series teams are kind of scuffling. I mean, the Indians are still, as you said, the best team in the division, and they'll probably still win it, but that doesn't mean they'll have the same playoff success based on the competition. Cubs may not win their division because of what Milwaukee is doing and may continue to do. So to what do you attribute that? I mean, do you just kind of call it that hangover effect that where guys are just you know, they just don't have it, like, you know, have the it, if you want to call it that, kind of like a pitcher sometimes doesn't have his stuff that's indefinable?
It's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think baseball is just really hard. Baseball is so difficult, and, you know, you get in these situations where maybe you don't in the moment notice that, you know, you're just too focused on the fact that, like, the Cubs have such a great pitching staff from top to bottom. And you don't really pay attention to the fact that, like, the Cubs really only use Kyle Hendricks for five innings at a time because teams crush him the third time through the order. And Jake Arrieta really is putting on some mileage we've never seen him put on before. I wonder how long that will hold up. And, hey, John Lester actually has a lot of innings on him at this point in his career. Maybe he won't be this guy forever. And John Lackey's 39 years old. And pitchers don't tend to succeed at the level that he's been succeeding at for this long. So you have all these good things happen and you kind of ignore in the moment, you know, as an analyst, as a fan, hey, things could go to hell real soon. And that's kind of what's happened. That's why they had to trade for Jose Quintana. They emptied out the last of their top 100 prospects to do it. Probably not a huge problem because they've got so many young guys in the lineup already, so it's not like there's a problem with not having an injection of youth down the line. But, you know, they're just dealing with the problems that come with having a pitching staff. It's like the Indians are a less severe version of what's happening to the Cubs. The Cubs are a less severe version of what's happening to the Mets, where they've just, everything has gone worse even more so.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, I don't think it's a cop-out answer. You're right. I mean, baseball is a hard game, and it's hard to master it the same way for all of the guys to master it one year to the next with the expectations being the same. And sometimes that is all the difference. Mark Normandin, MLB editor for SBNation.com, laying down the knowledge for us. Now, Mark, thanks very much. We appreciate your analysis, and we'd love to talk to you again as we get closer to that deadline, okay?
Of course, anytime.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Mark Normandin joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are now at the top of the hour, and we got a sports center coming your way. You know what else? I got something for you. I got something fun, particularly if you are into Vapor's Electronic Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. And if you are into that, you have got a $100 gift certificate that's going to make you love Vapor's Electronic Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. Gift certificates are good through August 31st. And if you would like one, be the 10th caller right now, caller 10, to 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065 for a $100 gift certificate to Vapor's Electronic Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. Again, that gift certificate will be good through August 31st. We'll give that away during the top of the hour sports center. Then we'll come back and get into some more of your phone calls. We got some Lonzo Ball news to talk about. We got an update on the fight. Has Conor McGregor already proven that he cannot win the fight against Floyd Mayweather? Well, according to at least one sparring partner, he sure as heck has. We'll talk about that as we continue as well. There's a couple of other fun stories we want you to be a part of at 866-240-1065 right after this on The Ticket.
Nick drives one in the air to right field. That ball is hit well to the track, to the wall, and gone. Castellanos with an opposite field home run. Driven to right field. That ball is way back, and JD has gone deep the other way. A three-run shot. There's a drive in the air to deep left field. Pierce going back to the wall. He looks up and gone. Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot. That ball skied in the air to right field. It's deep going back. Track. Wall. And it's up the top of the wall. On his way to second is Martinez, who said that's a home run. J.D. thought it was out. Here it is. Home run is the signal. J.D. Martinez has tied it up. And he walked him. It's a walk-off.
Two games against a good team, good offense, so Kansas City, and try to play good baseball.
Both the Dodgers and Astros had scouts in attendance Friday for JV's start here at Comerica Park, and I still think those are the two most likely candidates to land him. But I'll say this as well. The Tigers are now, I'm sensing, a little more willing to maybe put in a bit of cash in the deal to facilitate that trade if the right prospect package is there. There are some more affordable names. Sonny Gray makes less. I think Jay Happ with the Jays makes less. I think there are enough pitchers out there that make a lower salary that they would probably say, I'm not going to pay that premium.
They don't have
that
resume, though.
They don't. But again, Rod, I think so many times in baseball, especially at the deadline, it's all about how does he look right now. Well, Justin Wilson right now for the Tigers, a lot of teams like him. I would continue to add the Astros and Dodgers are both in the mix on him, as well as the Nationals and Brewers. Justin Wilson, from what I can tell from sources, is the Tigers' most marketable trade chip. A lot of action right now for JD in the National League West. Those two teams, the Rockies and Diamondbacks, like to get JD Martinez to help them, I think, against that lefty pitching.
That one up center. Zimmer on the move, and that baby's gone. Matt Chapman has a big league home run.
He connects against the two-time All-Star Corey Kluber.
Well, center field. From the right center field. Zimmer's back. Zimmer near the wall, and that baby's gone. Number 21 for Yonder Alonso. Davis, right center field. Hit pretty well, and it is gone. It's gone. Chris Davis is walking off for the
You walk three. I mean, six of the eight hitters he faced got on base. He just wasn't locating. He didn't know where he was throwing his fastball. Well, I mean, it's discouraging for a number of reasons. You're trying to win the game today. You know, you're trying to salvage a game out of the series, and you're down four before you can even look up. That's a hard way to play.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on into hour number two, we will say congratulations to our winner from hour number one. How about Mark Coulter of Delta? He won the $100 gift certificate to Vapor, so congratulations to Mark. Coming up in this hour, got a couple of other fun things for you as well. We'll tell you all about it as we go. But I want to start, Jim Cushman, because we spent a lot of time last week talking about the fight and the 4 day kind of, you know, one was really one continuous press conference, you know,
right.
4 days in four cities, Los Angeles. They did New York. They did Toronto, I think in that order. And then they did London, the lead up to the fight between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. And Conor McGregor talks one hail of a good game. He really, really does. I think he pretty much dismantled Floyd in the talking department, which is fine. But the question is, how will he hold up in the fighting department?
Right.
Now, Jim, what I'm about to say is kind of important.
Okay.
Because I've made it very, very clear on the record multiple times on this show that I believe it will be a unanimous decision for Floyd Mayweather.
You have, yep.
120 to 108.
You've got
literally
me to completely agree
rounds.
With that, too.
I'm sorry, what?
You've gotten me to completely agree with that assessment, too.
Right. So he literally is going to win all 12 rounds, I think, in the 10-9 scoring system. So it'll be 120 to 108 would be my prediction. Because I don't think Conor McGregor is going to be able to penetrate Floyd's incredible defense. He's one of the best defensive fighters of all time, not just of his era, but of all time. And so no way Conor McGregor gets a knockout. And I don't think Floyd Mayweather would get a knockout, I've argued, because I don't think he's going to risk going inside on Conor McGregor to punch with him just in the off chance that McGregor does tag him because he's got some power. So because of that, you're going to have really a very, very methodical point-by-point whooping that McGregor would give – or excuse me, that Mayweather would give McGregor because he's just a superior fighter, and he'll score points with blows that really don't do a whole lot of damage. I may have to retract and withdraw my prediction. And it's not because I'm a waffler, and it's not because I'm a fence sitter. I really believed that would be the case. But as circumstances change, the wise man alters things based on those changing circumstances. And, Jim, we have some changing circumstances. It is entirely possible now that there will be a knockout in this fight, and it will not be by the heavy-handed Conor McGregor. It would be by the guy who doesn't really knock anybody out anymore. And that would be Floyd Mayweather. What is this new evidence that we have that might change this prediction? The fact that Conor McGregor reportedly got knocked the hell out in sparring. Conor McGregor
Whoops.
Got knocked out while sparring.
Whoops.
According to multiple reports. Chris Van Heerden is a boxer and a very little-known one, and he is one of the sparring partners for Conor McGregor getting prepared for this Floyd Mayweather fight, which is August 26th. And according to a tweet this past Friday by Chris Van Heerden, he pretty much knocked out Conor McGregor. Now, when you're sparring, you don't like they don't let you go all the way to a knockout.
Right.
But if you kind of firm up on the guy, you know, if the sparring partner starts to firm up the guy that's the, you know, they're preparing for the fight, they'll pretty much stop it right away and pull you back because they don't want that to happen, obviously. Chris Van Heerden tweeted on Friday, people telling me Mayweather will have his hands full trying to land on McGregor, stop it! Exclamation point. I respect McGregor, but I ain't Floyd, and I landed. And sure enough, there is some video of this sparring session between Conor McGregor and Chris Van Heerden. Now, he is not necessarily talking about Van Heerden. He is not necessarily knocking him out, but again, kind of stiffening him up, if you will, or firming him up, whatever you want to call it, to the point where he's landing some serious shots that might have led to a knockout had they been allowed to do that, had they been going all out for this. Jesse Vargas, who is a former WBO welterweight champion, has revealed that McGregor did indeed get tagged like that, knockout style, while sparring. So I want to read two different reports for you. First of all, the one that I just mentioned from Jesse Vargas. Remember the video where Conor McGregor got schooled by a pro boxer, cries that it was isolated footage. This is on MMA Mania, by the way. So this is a We Like Conor site. This is SB Nation, MMA Mania. We like Conor because we like, you know, MMA. So this isn't trying to make him look bad. Cries that it was isolated footage or perhaps orchestrated in favor of South African welterweight Chris Van Heerden took yet another hit this past weekend when former WBO welterweight champion Jesse Vargas revealed that notorious Conor McGregor was recently, in his words, stiffened while sparring for the upcoming Mayweather fight. Quote, Conor's gonna get knocked out, Vargas told Villainfy Media. Mayweather always lives up to the hype, I have no doubt. I actually want to put money down on it. The odds aren't that bad. McGregor, though, got knocked out in sparring already, man. McGregor, who recently wrapped up his press conference world tour to promote the money fight next month in Las Vegas, will put his UFC lightweight strap on hold to try his luck at boxing, blah, blah, blah. Even if he does get knocked out again, as MMA Mania says, because he was in sparring, according to them, he'll have several reasons not to care. And that's very true. Doesn't matter what happens here. The money's guaranteed for both of these guys. Now back to the video. I went ahead and looked for the video, and I found it also on MMAmania.com, which is a part of SB Nation. Headline, this video of Conor McGregor getting schooled by a pro boxer has UFC fans worried sick. There are some MMA fans who are convinced Ultimate Fighting Championship lightweight champion Conor McGregor possesses the skills to defeat undefeated pugilist Floyd Mayweather in a straight-up boxing match, probably because of comments like the ones he made in the press conferences. But UFC fans will undoubtedly be worried sick when they watch the above sparring session between McGregor and South African welterweight Chris Van Heerden, who toyed with the power-punching Irishman when they previously shared the ring. Toyed with him, MMA Mania says. Conor showed me that he's got some boxing background, said Van Heerden to the Washington Journal. His counter left hand was pretty good. What chance does he have against Mayweather, the best boxer in the world? A puncher's chance. So he swings well. He swings a big shot. Maybe he lands it. That might seal it for him. But honestly, do I see Conor beating Mayweather? No, I don't. We'll find out, of course, on August 26th. But the video that is attached to the story that I just mentioned on MMA Mania is also the video tweeted by Chris Van Heerden himself, which also came on Friday. And it does indeed show him landing some pretty heavy shots on Conor McGregor that might have been knockout shots. Might have been knockout shots had he been allowed to continue to fight in such a way. So, Kush, I have been so adamant there will not be a knockout in this fight. It'll be a boring 12-round decision. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm not going to spend $100 on the fight.
Right.
I might have been willing to spend $10 on the fight with 10 other dudes or 9 other dudes to watch it at somebody's house. You know, split up the cost. But I also said I wouldn't even give $10 for it, not because I don't want to watch it, but because I don't want to give any of my money to Floyd Mayweather to not pay his taxes on it. So I'm just not happy about doing that. But it may be a little more exciting than perhaps I was thinking, because I just didn't think that Conor McGregor was going to get knocked out or knocked around a little bit in his sparring sessions. The situation has changed. The wise man, the reasonable man, alters his prediction or his, you know, analysis of things when the facts change themselves. And this apparently is a new fact in this case, that Conor got banged around by a sparring partner.
Yeah, it's not a good sign from a Conor McGregor point of view. You can't be having these things happen in the sparring warm-up type things. And again, as you mentioned, they, you know, in that kind of mode, you're not going to go fully all out. That's why he wasn't, like, officially knocked out or anything. But the fact that in the sparring session with boxers who are, I'll use the most generous term, well below the quality of Floyd Mayweather, even at this age, that's a terrible sign. You know, because we've been talking about it enough on this show, Bob, that you've had me convinced that, yeah, the whole, it's going to go 12 full, nobody's going to knock anybody out, it's going to be unanimous in favor of Floyd. I've been hearing it so much, I'm beginning to, like, fully believe, yeah, you guys are onto something here, that's probably what's going to happen. But hearing this, that's not a good sign. That just isn't. It makes you wonder if Floyd lands something in an early round. Is that going to be it?
Yeah, or not even one, but just a multitude of punches.
Sure.
In a little flurry here that he's done. Now I'm watching the video as you and I speak. And I'll tweet it out from our Twitter handle, which is SportsRadio1065, so everybody else can see this if you haven't already. I've never seen a guy look so flat-footed as he's sparring. You know how, even in sparring sessions, boxers bounce.
Yeah.
You're on the balls of your feet, you're bouncing. And especially against a guy like Floyd Mayweather, you better be quick.
Yeah.
And you better be bouncy.
Oh, yeah.
You better be elusive. And when you see Conor McGregor fight in the MMA, he does that. He's on the balls of his feet and he's kind of, rocking around and shoulders are shifting and swaying and the head is bobbing and weaving and all those kinds of things. You would expect that in a boxing match where you're not allowed to use your feet the way he is allowed to use in MMA, that he would be even more so trying to be up and on his feet and elusive and practicing it, giving Floyd Mayweather a moving target to try to catch. And I don't know. Maybe this video is edited down to the point where this is just when maybe he was doing his flat-footed banging sessions. Where it's, I'm not trying to be elusive and I'm not trying to be quick. I'm not trying to duck and shuck and move and jive and slide and shift and be shifty and not be easy to catch. Maybe this is, I'm going to work on a power game right now. And that's why he's flat-footed.
I suppose that's possible. They go through all sorts of different things in these sessions.
So you take this stuff with a grain of salt when you watch video like this. And you can say, maybe that's what he's doing here. So, it won't be like that in the real fight because right now he's just practicing his power game. So he's staying flat-footed and banging with his sparring partner. But, number one, if that is the case, then it's a bad sign because he's banging with a sparring partner in a power-hitting session, and he's losing it.
Yeah.
And then, number two, if this is just kind of an isolated thing, I think Chris Van Heerden probably would have said, had a good session with Conor today. He's got some good moves. He's got this, that, and the other. But I was able to ding him a little bit in this power session. And again, I'm not a boxer. You know who we need to get on? We need to get on our guy who talked to us. Who did we talk to before the Robert Easter fight, Jim?
Bronco McCart.
Brock, yeah, we do. We need to talk to him because I don't know if this is the kind of thing you do in sparring. Maybe you do have, regular sparring sessions, and then we're going to go flat-footed, toe-to-toe type stuff just to work on that. But you would think that Van Heerden would have said, in that session, I got him a little bit. Chris Van Heerden is just basically saying, not that this was a specific kind of session, and there was a couple of isolated moments where I was able to tag Conor. He's basically saying, I ain't Floyd Mayweather. And I landed shots on Conor McGregor. He's saying that this is just it. This is who he is. This is the kind of boxer he's going to be. And if this kind of boxer he's going to be, flat-footed and slow, even at age 41, Conor's only, 28? Floyd Mayweather's 41. Even with the 13 years of age difference, Floyd Mayweather is legions faster than what Chris Van Heerden is. And if Chris Van Heerden can hit Conor McGregor at will like this, then guess what? Floyd Mayweather, even at 41, is going to destroy Conor McGregor in the same type of fashion. McGregor just looks so slow in the sparring session. Now, the last thing that I'll say as a maybe, maybe an explanation for this, is maybe that Conor McGregor knows what he's doing. Maybe this is a psychological warfare. Maybe he is filming these sessions, allowing them to be put on the internet, showing him flat-footed and slow. Showing him getting tagged a little bit, Chris Van Heerden. Why would he want to show that to the internet? Why would he want to show this video to anybody? Why would Conor McGregor's camp allow this video to be leaked to the media, to Twitter by way of Chris Van Heerden? Why would he allow that? Unless, maybe, it's because he wants Floyd Mayweather to see him flat-footed and slow. He wants Floyd Mayweather to see him getting tagged a couple of times. He wants Floyd Mayweather's camp to see him, man, Pretty Boy Floyd. Well, he used to be Pretty Boy Floyd. Now he's Money Man. Money, go get this fool. Take him out in three. Embarrass him. Send him back to MMA with his tail between his legs. Go take him out. Look at him. Look how slow he is. Look what this welterweight sparring partner from, where'd I say, South Africa or someplace? Or
South
Australia?
Yeah, you said South Africa.
All right. Look at this guy. Look what he did to him. And then that brings Floyd in to do that against Connor, and then bang, now Connor's got him where he wants him, which is not on the defensive. You know, that with the great defensive prowess that Floyd Mayweather has, now he's actually being a little more careless to take some shots to take out Connor like the sparring partner did, and now maybe that's when Connor can actually catch him and tag him a couple. So is this real? Is this Connor McGregor just not very good at boxing, that he's getting almost knocked out in a sparring session? Or is this part of the mental? Because I can tell you this, Jim, you listen to Conor McGregor talk, everything that he does with a plan. Everything. He's willing to be the heel. He's willing to, you know, be the instigator at all of these press conferences to make people hate him, make people want to beat him up, make black people hate him in particular. I'll play the race angle and say, dance with me, boy, and you can't read, all this stuff. He's willing to do everything to get an edge. And I'm wondering if this isn't one of those things that he could use to get an edge. Just thinking, just asking.
It's an interesting theory, I'll give you that.
You know, because I just can't believe he'd be this slow and this bad in a sparring session. And then who's controlling the circumstances around?
Yeah.
Generally speaking, when there's a sparring session for a fighter preparing for a major fight, if there's video, it is only for the fighter and his corner, so that he and his trainer and his manager and his corner man can all look at it and say, you know, this is what you got to do. This is good. This is bad. Look what this, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's part of the game planning. Nobody is allowed to take video and then just, here, I'm going to post this on Twitter of Connor getting his butt kicked in a sparring session, unless that's part of the plan. I can't imagine somebody saying, hey, I got some really good video here of Connor just taking some shots from Van Heerden.
Right.
And the McGregor corner going, oh, yeah, no kidding? Well, that's cool. Hey, go post it, man. See what people think. I can't imagine that unless, like I say, this is something that's part of the strategy. Steven in Toledo, you're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. How you doing, my man? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm going to tell you this. This is all staged. My opinion, I don't think Connor has any interest in winning a fight. You got to look at this. He's going to make more money than he ever will in MMA. So whether he win or lose, he's getting a huge payday. He'll never make this kind of money in MMA. So whatever they showed on, one thing he needs to do, if he is staging or he's looking like he's doing an okey-doke, he better be careful not to get hurt and not be able to fight in the fight at all. So that's my opinion. I mean, you're hurt in the sparring sessions, correct.
Yeah. If well, he is staging those sparring sessions. You know how these sparring sessions are. I'm watching the video. It's headgear. And again, if he's taking any serious shots, you know, they're stepping. And I can't tell that they stepped in because, and this is what's really goofy. Have you seen the video, Steven, online or anything?
No, I have not, but I am curious.
Okay.
I'm going to watch
it. I'm going to try my best to describe it. It's about, hold on, it's 56 seconds long. But it's not a minute, you know, 56 seconds straight of sparring. It's cuts. You can see the video stop and start again. So it's just like clips from a sparring session,
okay,
all, you know, put back to back to back. You can see the edits in the video. So if that's the case, then it may just be rope-a-dope, if you will. You know, psychological stuff where he's showing his weaknesses and he's allowing them to put these bad moments within an overall larger or longer sparring session where in these individual moments he took some shots. And they'll put him back to back to back to back in a 56-minute clip. They'll let Chris Van Heerden put it online. They'll let anybody they want to put it online so that Floyd's people see it and they think, you know, we're going to kill this guy. When in reality, maybe what's happening in the rest of that sparring session is very, very different than that, and they don't want anybody else to see. Now, I'm just guessing here because I think there is a lot of psychological games being played.
Well, maybe I think that Mayweather and his camp have been doing this too long. I think he's too seasoned a fighter to fall for something like that. I'm thinking others have tried. Others have tried the same type of mental tactics, and I just don't think they'll show you your weakness and everything like that, you know, because they know you're going to watch film. They're going to watch past fights and all that. Same thing in football or any other. There's film session. That's why we watch it, you know. But I just don't believe that. I actually believe what you see is what you get.
I'm with you. Hey, Stevan, I'm with you in that I don't believe it would work because you're right. Floyd is too smart and he's too seasoned to fall for it. But that doesn't mean McGregor wouldn't try it because, you know, they're in a – I don't want to use the word desperation, but he has no chance of winning this fight, none. So a desperate man might do anything he can to try to make this a fight, and that is let's show Floyd some of me getting smacked and looking slow and flat-footed so that maybe he'll engage. Maybe he won't be. And I agree, he won't fall for it. Floyd is too good. But in Conor's head or in his camp's, you know, philosophy, let's see if we can lull him in. Let's see if we can lull him in to come and bang on me because they've seen me getting hit in sparring sessions. And when he gets close enough, that's when maybe I can unleash something that I would not be able to unleash on him otherwise because he's too good of a defensive fighter. It won't work, but it might be just a desperate enough thing for him to try.
And I'm going to go through my original theory. I don't think he cares. I think he's in it for the money because – he's not going to make this kind of money in MMA unless he goes into acting or some sort of entertainment. Even though MMA, I particularly don't like it, but I understand it's very popular. But it's not generating the type of income that boxing, which is down now, is generating.
No, you're right about that. He'll never make this kind of money probably in all of the rest of his fights combined. This is what he's going to make in one night. Will probably triple or quadruple his career earnings. So you're right about that. But just because he's in it for the money, and he is, doesn't mean that he doesn't care if he wins or loses. I think he doesn't expect to win because he knows he's in Floyd's world. He's punching with 10-ounce gloves instead of 4-ounce gloves. But a guy like him who talks as much as he does, and forget about this press conferences with Floyd, but even in his world, in his MMA, these guys have egos. Like to lose.
They do.
I'm not saying he expects to win, but I would disagree with you when you say he doesn't care if he wins or loses. I think he very much would like to win, but he recognizes he's willing to lose to make this money.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't say that may be a wrong choice of words, but I don't think there's a lot of pressure on him. There's more pressure on Mayweather than it is on him. Because
hell yeah.
Like, everybody don't, not even people in the MMA world expect him to win this fight. So Mayweather, who has been dubbed, in, you know, best fighter in the world in boxing, he has a lot of pressure on him. So, you know, I mean,
when he beats Conor McGregor, and he will, it will just be what he was expected to do because Conor came to his world, came to the 12 rounds of 3 minutes at a time with just punching and neutral corners and Marquis of Queensberry rules. And if Conor were to bring Floyd into his world into five-minute rounds in an octagon where you can do all kinds of other things besides punches, he would be expected to destroy Floyd. So you're right. Floyd is supposed to win. Floyd will win. And when he does, he will have been expected to, and it will be no big deal. But if by some miracle of science or luck of the Irish, it's Conor McGregor's Irish, he were to lose, he loses everything. His undefeated record at 49-0, his pound-for-pound, you know, mythical championship, his mystique, his aura. Boxing as a sport loses. How could the greatest boxer in the world lose to a non-boxer, a guy who's never had a pro fight? He's only been an MMA fighter. And prior to that, an amateur boxer, he'd never had a pro fight. So, yeah, Floyd has way more pressure on him. He's carrying not only his legacy into the ring, he's carrying the sport of boxing into the ring, knowing that if he loses to this clown, this Irish clown, that his entire sport takes a hit in addition to his reputation. So, yes, that is a lot of pressure that Floyd carries into the ring.
Thanks for the time.
You got it, my brother. Good call. Thank you. Yeah, Floyd is... Floyd is going to win, and when he does, you know what will happen on Sunday morning? I assume, right? August 26th is a Saturday. I haven't even really looked, Jim. Is it a Saturday? Yeah, it's a Saturday. I got it.
Yeah, it is.
I assume on Sunday morning, people will look at it, or maybe late Saturday night, those who don't watch the fight. You know, they'll look at highlights on SportsCenter or wherever they are, and the next day they'll see it, or they'll go on Twitter, whatever the case might be, and they'll yawn. And say, yeah, figured. You know, Floyd knocked him out in 7, you know, but what do you expect? Conor's not a boxer. They'll yawn. Or Floyd won a unanimous decision, like I said. He won all 12 rounds, 120 and 108. Wasn't even close. And they'll yawn. And neither fighter will have been hurt by it. because McGregor was expected to lose. He was changing his entire world to make this fight happen, all for the money. 4-ounce gloves to 10-ounce gloves. Five-minute rounds to 12 3-minute rounds. Only fighting with the hands. Not allowed to grab. Not allowed to do takedowns. Not allowed to do submission holds. Not allowed to do ground and pound. Marquise of Queensberry rules. Of course, neither guy will be hurt. Both will be richer. Neither guy will be hurt reputation-wise when that happens. The only way a reputation can be hurt, the only way damage can be done to anybody or anything, is for Floyd and boxing to lose. If Floyd loses,
agreed,
boxing is destroyed, as we know. And it's already a shell of what it used to be. If Floyd loses, boxing is destroyed as we know it. MMA fans will go crazy saying, we just killed boxing. We just started becoming mainstream a few short years ago, MMA, full contact fighting, not just punching. We just started a few short years ago, and we said we're going to challenge the boxing establishment and try to win over the one-on-one contact sports crowd to come to us. And now we finally had our crossover moment. One of us against one of them, and we beat them in their game. MMA, UFC will have a victory that will last for eternity. And when I say a victory, I don't mean just in pride. I mean dollars that will start flowing their way from boxing fans to MMA that you've never even imagined. And boxing, as we know it, will be forever diminished. And that will be the right result if Conor McGregor were to pull that off. There's no pressure on McGregor. All the pressure is on Floyd to defend his sport on his turf, in his ring, on his terms.
Agreed.
And that's what's going to make it interesting. So I want to know, do you think Conor really is getting banged around in this boxing, in this sparring session? Or are they showing these little, you know, edited short clips of him taking some shots, going back to back to back to back in 56 seconds like this, letting this get leaked to the internet, letting Chris Van Heerden tweet this, all in an effort to lull Floyd Mayweather into carelessness? To lull him into, man, I thought I was going to have to worry about this dude's power. Look, this stiff from South Africa is knocking him around. I'm going to go out there and drop him in three. And then he goes out there, starts swinging some heavy fists that he's not used to doing, Floyd Mayweather. And suddenly he's in Conor Mayweather's world now, and Conor McGregor's world now. And McGregor is able to start banging some shots at him that he would not otherwise have. I don't know. It's got.
Although the more I keep hearing
all the trappings of a rope-a-dope to me. Go ahead.
The more though I keep hearing you present that theory, the video rope-a-dope, if you will, I gotta believe there's part of me that's thinking I'm not so sure, just because maybe if McGregor himself isn't, somebody in his camp has got to be thinking, well, you know, he is gonna be too smart for that. And maybe they just did it anyway on the grounds. Well,
yeah, just desperate times call for desperate measures. I'm sure they all know he's too smart for it. But what did, in other words,
no harm, no foul kind of thing?
Right. They're like, look, we can just train here in private, like always, and do our thing, let him do his thing, and then get in the ring and hope for the best. Or, what the hell? Let's try it. Let's see if we can make him just a little bit ultra comfortable in there, saying, man, this dude's stiff. Look how slow he is. If he doesn't buy it, we're in the same boat we were before. We'll see what happens. If he does buy it, it's a win. In other words, there's everything to gain and nothing to lose by trying a trick like this.
Yeah.
If he's too smart for it and his camp is too smart for it and he is not going to change the way he fights because of some video he saw, then so what? We still have a regular old fight to fight. But if he does get lulled, even just for a second, into thinking, well, if Van Heerden can take this boy out, I'm going to take this boy out, well, then we've won, you know, a little advantage here.
And I follow you on
in
that.
In a fight that we're still in a very big disadvantage.
Right.
Against.
Yeah, no doubt. And I follow you on that. The flip side of me keeps coming back, though, and thinking, but if this is not a setup, if this is not video rope-a-dope,
then he's going to get killed.
Man, there's some problems here for McGregor.
Then you can take my prediction I've been making for the last 2 months and throw it out the window of 120 to 108.
Yeah.
Because if Van Heerden is really stiffening him up with those shots, then Floyd is probably going to knock him out inside of seven.
That's inside of seven, maybe inside of five.
Yeah, maybe that too. Hey, but you know what? When you watch that fight, here's what you got to do. The same thing you do when you're watching every outstanding sporting event, and that is watch it with your friends. And when you're having a watch party, here's what you got to do. You got to call and order the food from B-Dub's Party Menu. That's right. Or download the new Buffalo Wild Wings app as well. Even if it's not a party and you just want to root for your team from the couch by yourself, your best move is the Buffalo Wild Wings takeout that you can order right from their new app. Download it today. You can customize your order. You can save your favorites from previous orders. Schedule your pickup time. It is an amazing way to get B-Dubs for your sporting events. With the B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu, by the way, you get all the highlights from the menu at discounted prices. That's every Monday through Friday from 11 to 2. But try their fan favorites, which are there for a limited time. Specials like the barbecue pork grilled cheese sandwich is simply amazing. And the Buffalo Loaded Tots, everybody loves those. Trust me on this one. Call Buffalo Wild Wings whenever the game is on, or in this case, when the fight is on, because Buffalo Wild Wings is wings, beer, and sports.
240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, final segment of the afternoon. Remember, coming up at 5 o'clock, Cushland, Mr. Miller is out there doing drive time from the Marathon Classic at Island Nose.
Yes, he is indeed. Already checked it earlier. We are good to go. Sounding good.
Looking forward to that. Mike will be there all week long for drive time, and then we will be out there with him, preceding him, on Thursday and Friday for the actual first two rounds of the Classic on Thursday and Friday. So we're certainly looking forward to that. Our thanks to Jim Heller, who coordinates everything out there at the Classic. He's our go-to media guy, and we look forward to catching up with him a little bit on Thursday and Friday as well.
So, darn right. He's always fun to talk to.
Heller's such a good guy. Good people. Loved working with him years ago, and I'm so glad to be able to work with him when we do for events like this one. No question about that. Hey, just a couple of other quick stories. Actually, one more quick story, because we're on our way toward drive time here. Kush, did you check out Lonzo Ball again in another Summer League game last night?
No, I did not. I'll freely admit.
Lonzo Ball, first of all, he continues to kill it. He narrowly missed a third triple-double in this Summer League season, which, again, take the stats for what it's worth because it is Summer League, but it's still pretty doggone impressive. But it's not that. By the way, he had 14 and 10, I think, in the first half. So he had a double-double before they even, you know, got to the break, which is pretty doggone impressive. But that's not what it's about. It's not the stats that everybody's looking at. You know what everybody's looking at when Lonzo Ball plays these days? Jimmy?
Wait, say that again?
Do you know what people are looking at when Lonzo Ball plays in the Summer League these days?
His shoes.
His feet. Exactly right. It's about his feet. Lonzo Ball is wearing a different pair of shoes from a different manufacturer pretty much every game out. And it has everybody wondering what is dude doing. Pop says his big baller brand shoes, the Zo2s, are worth $495. $495. If you're scoring at home, that's a $5 bill shy of $500. And you should wear those. But dude isn't wearing them himself. What the hell? Well, some people are speculating now. Some people in the endorsement and in the shoe industry are saying Lonzo Ball is actually playing a very, very smart game here. He is doing two things. Number one, Lonzo Ball is kind of showing Dad, hey, Pops, we're not going to upset the multi-billion dollar shoe industry with our own multi-billion dollar claims that my shoes are better than all their shoes. It isn't going to work. We're not going to get this $1 billion a payment that you want somebody to give me and my brothers. It's not going to work. So therefore, two, I'm about to auction off my services. I'm going to wear a Nike this day. I'm going to wear an Under Armour next game. I'm going to wear a different Nike. I'm going to wear an Adidas. I'm going to wear whatever it is I want various nights, and I'm going to have them coming for my endorsement services. LeVar Ball says that Lonzo Ball is not in the business of looking for other shoe endorsement deals. He said this is just Lonzo showing off his independence. He said they're just Lonzo, you know, all the rest of those fools, and I'm paraphrasing LeVar Ball here, all the rest of those fools have to wear the same shoe all the time. They're locked in. This company tells them, you have to wear this shoe. You have to wear it here. You have to wear it when you're on the court. You have to wear this shoe when you're off the court. If you get caught in a different shoe, then you're going to lose your deal. And Lonzo doesn't have to do that. Lonzo is his own man. Lonzo can wear whatever shoe he wants. That's what he's showing. And I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking about this, and I'm reminded of the fact that LeVar Ball, while he may be a number of good things, doesn't know a damn thing about the economics of endorsements.
Oh, you know why? You can say that again.
You know why all those other players are locked into having to wear this shoe and that shoe even when they're off the court? Because they're getting $1 billion to do it.
Right.
Your son isn't, which is why he can wear anything. Sure, he's got freedom. Sure, he's his own man. That's because he hasn't signed a deal with anybody. So if your whole goal here, LeVar, is to let Zoe wear whatever he wants, whenever he wants in his NBA career, that's super. He can enjoy that flexibility. He can wear a Kobe one night to have Mamba mentality. He can wear a LeBron or a Steph another night, or a KD, Trey, or any of those other ones that he, you know, that are out there. He can wear whatever shoe he wants, but just know that they ain't giving him a damn nickel to do it, because right. He's not being exclusive. The only person who says he should be exclusive is you, and he's basically telling you, hey, Pops, I'm out. Good luck with your big baller brand, but I'm out. I heard Jimmy, a great commentary about this today, who said what LeVar Ball has successfully created is a t-shirt company. The t-shirt big baller brand is about the only thing he's going to sell, that and maybe the hats. But nobody's going to be buying these $500 shoes when even Lonzo won't wear them on a regular basis. It's not going to happen. And the reason why is, Jim, do you know, and I'm sure you do, there are scientists, engineers, basically, yeah. Shoe engineers, who study these things, and the best in the world have been hired by Nike and by Under Armour, et cetera.
And I'm not fluent in it, but I'm aware of it.
What's that?
I'm not fluent in it, but I'm aware of all this.
But, I mean, obviously, I mean, they've been doing this for so many years, particularly Nike, but you know, and a little bit less so Under Armour, which is a newer company. But they have the best shoe designers and scientists in the world. And people need to understand, these aren't just like fashion designers. What will look cool on this part of the heel? What will look really cool on this side? No. There are doctors, Jim. There are doctors that these companies hire who have ultimate knowledge, generally speaking, podiatrists, of the human foot. And they know every single nerve ending in the foot. They know where all of the pressure points are. They know the best way to make this shoe comfortable based on this design, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that, millions of dollars worth of research goes into the design of all of these shoes. And they've been doing it for all these years. Now here comes LeVar, whose experience in all of this is being his kid's coach, being his kid's backyard workout warrior drill instructor, and making a bunch of t-shirts that say Big Baller Brand. And you're going to make shoes that are better than the shoes designed by doctors, engineers, and athletic apparel experts for decades and decades and decades? You're going to make shoes better than theirs?
Right.
And you're going to get people to pay twice the price for it? You're going to get LeBron's most expensive shoe is, I think, $275.
I think you're right.
And he's got four MVPs in those shoes. Zoe wants $495, and Zoe ain't got 4 minutes in those shoes.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
the NBA level.
Meanwhile, real quick, Bob, the wonderful musings of LeVar Ball on those economics.
They won't allow them to get me $1 billion. Their mindset won't allow that. So I already know, because I'm not taking nothing less. So like I said, it used to be $1 billion, now it's $3 billion. Their mind won't allow them to do that, so it's okay.
Oh, my God. You know what? Dude is entertaining.
Can't deny that.
But for all of his antics, at the end of the day, what we have figured out is he has created a t-shirt company. He'll sell Big Baller Brand t-shirts, and that will be it, because ain't nobody going to pay him $1 billion for his kid to wear his own Big Baller Brand shoes, especially when the kid is essentially saying, Nike, I like these. Come to me. Make me an offer. Under Armour, I like these. Come to me and make me an offer. My dad won't be a problem. I'm just about ready to kick him to the curb. So that is where we're going to have to end it. Don't go anywhere, however, because coming up, we've got golf for you. Not golf on the radio per se, but we do have the Mike Miller Drive Time program coming to you live from the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows, where they're playing practice rounds today and tomorrow and Wednesday. The ladies in advance of the Marathon Classic game, day one and two of the tournament, of course, Thursday and Friday, when we will be out there as well. So stay where you are for Mike Miller and Drive Time, and we will talk to you tomorrow. But we'll talk to you live from the Marathon Classic ourselves on Thursday. So until next time, have yourself a great night. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.